All right, I can formally open this public meeting of the Inner West Local Planning Panel. It being a public meeting, I should, on behalf of the Council, acknowledge the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation on whose country we are meeting today, their elders past and present. The next item on the agenda are declarations of interest. I'm not aware that there are any. And I'm
And
still
I'm still
getting
getting feedback.
feedback. Could those who aren't speaking please turn off your mics? All right. Thank you. The first of the two planning proposals we have on the agenda is the planning proposal for 389 Illawarra Road, Marrickville. We have each been able to inspect the site of this proposal, at least from the outside. We have read the material produced by the council, and at least for my own part, I have been able to look at the late material submitted by Mr. McKee. We are familiar with what is proposed, namely a heritage listing of the property. And I should first invite Mr. McKee. I should say, Mr. McKee, I have read, and I think we have all read, your letter dated yesterday and the annexures. And we have also read the letter from Mr. Graham Brooks, also dated yesterday. So, Mr. McKee, the ball's in your court for the
Board for
moment.
the moment.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, it's Cath Roach here, panel member. Just before we, Mr. McKee starts, it might be appropriate, just given the environment that we're in, for each of the panel members just to introduce themselves and confirm no conflicts of interest, if you're comfortable with that.
Thank you for
Thank you
that.
for that, then.
That's a good suggestion. The panel comprises four members. I am David Lloyd. I chair this panel and a number of other panels. I'm a lawyer. I'm a QC. I'm a former judge of the Land and Environment Court. I'm a former acting judge of the Supreme Court, and I'm presently a professor of law at Western Sydney University. Mr. McInerney.
Yes, my name is John McInerney. I'm a qualified town planner and architect and a past Deputy Lord Mayor at the City of Sydney.
Ms. Tuer.
Yes, my name is Annalise Tor. I have qualifications in architecture and planning. I was a Commissioner of the Land Environment Court, and I'm now a member of a number of local and state panels.
And Ms. Roach.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Cath Roach. I have a company, Sync Solutions. I do a lot of work across a lot of local councils in New South Wales. My initial background with local government was as an intern ombudsman with Sutherland Shire Council for 5 years. I've worked as an executive director at Housing New South Wales for a few years. Long term with Sync Solutions, and I sit on a number of panels. On this particular panel, I'm here as the community representative, Mr. Chair, and I confirm no conflicts of interest.
All right, thank you for that. And as I was saying at the outset, we have had an opportunity to review the written material with which we've been supplied. And Mr. McKee, I think you should go first. We've read your written submission in your letter of 3rd of June.
Thank you. I'm happy to go first if that be your strong preference, Mr. Chairman. I was going to suggest that Daniel Dwyer, who is the client, the landowner, the client, the landowner, if he could go first, and then Graham Brooks deal with the heritage matters, and then I could go third. But I'm open to whatever you wish.
No, we're happy to proceed in that order. All right, Mr. Dwyer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Wonderful to hear those backgrounds and to meet you all. My name's Daniel Dwyer. I'm the Director of Group Operations for Fresh Hope, and Fresh Hope is the public-facing arm of Churches of Christ in New South Wales, and we've been around approximately 140 years. Whilst we're certainly not the traditional owners of the land, We are the original owners in its current developed form of this site at 389 Illawarra Road and its adjacent site, so Marrickville Church of Christ. It's great to be able to address you all in regard to the project we are seeking on this site. And I know that this is to consider some other issues, but by way of background and just to give a bit of a scenario setting, in our view, no private developer would engage upon this style of project in this area. Churches of Christ, Fresh Hope, has a very strong belief, unlike many of our contemporaries, that this is land that we need to, or an asset that we need to steward in order to serve the community. And in our engagement with council and with stakeholders in the community, our view is a community housing project would be most amenable to this site. We are putting the land in at no charge, no cost. This project does not work on a standard up and down feasibility. It doesn't work as a develop to sell. It doesn't work as a community housing site where we attribute any value to the land itself. So that is approximately $7 million worth of value that we're writing off from the get-go. The opportunity to partner with Nightingale, who are a socially conscious and sustainable community housing or affordable housing provider in Melbourne, to provide a community housing outcome in Sydney, their first community housing outcome in Sydney, we thought was an incredible opportunity. So that's a bit of our background. This is not a site that would be developed in any other way. We are a community housing provider, and in our conversations with council, we've always maintain the position that we want to work with council, we want to work with the local community. We have no intentions of selling this site, and we'll put caveats on site to protect it for the future, in the form of this community housing use, if that was appealing to council. Graeme McKee, is there any other aspects that you'd like me to cover off in providing the background of Fresh Hope and Churches of Christ?
No, that's fine, Daniel. I think that's fine. Graham Brooks will deal with the heritage aspects. That's it.
All right. Well, we'll hear from Graham Brooks now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I know some of you, and I've appeared before the committee towards the end of last year, but I'm the Managing Director of GBA Heritage. I've been a heritage consultant for the best part of 40-odd years, I guess. But in terms of this project, we did one of the studies early on last year, which was an analysis of the heritage significance of the building. I should note that Council first looked at this whole area of Marrickville way back in 2015. They got some recommendations for a variety of projects, but the then administrator in 2017 decided to delete about six of the recommended properties and suggested to Council they should only go forward with these items as part of a future heritage study. Now, since 2017, there has been no specific heritage study as such, a wider heritage study, and there's been no attempt to start to list this particular property until this current DA was brought forward. So I'm just wondering, in some extent, the heritage thing is debatable. There's been nine separate studies since 2015 that councils had been made aware of. In that period of time, they've made no attempt to protect the building, but having done so, then received a number of applications and inquiries, etc., they've been aware that there's a project emerging on this site. So nine reports, five for the council, four for the developer or the applicant, and still no one's quite sure whether this is significant or not. The idea of the IHO was to provide more time for further research. The last study for council attempted to do that and could not find any additional research or conclusions that hadn't been made by some of the previous people. So you've got this sense that it's a building of doubtful significance. There's been a number of attempts to try and clothe it with enough significance to list it. I think that is still very much a debatable exercise. So we really feel that there needs to be a compromise, and I'll close at this point, a sense that there's two separate objectives available to the court, to the panel. One is to proceed with the idea of social housing, community housing, that's just been explained to you, and whether that is a much better community and broader social outcome than the retention of a building which has been now abandoned by its community. It's lost its integrity to some extent in the 1930s. It's judged as being one of the lesser works of this particular architect, and with that, that's all detailed in our study from a year ago. So this has been very carefully thought through, very carefully judged, and we're very confident that there's no need for the panel to proceed to a planning proposal with this particular project. Thank you.
Do any of the panel members have any questions?
Yes, Annalise Tora, I have a question. Mr. Brooks, balancing whether there's more community benefit by social housing as opposed to heritage listing is not really the question before us. The question before us is whether the proposal is of such heritage significance to warrant it going forward for a planning proposal to list. Yes. So do you want to just quickly, you mentioned a few reasons why you don't think it meets the threshold for heritage listing as a local icon. Can you just very, very briefly articulate the reasons why you don't think it meets that threshold?
Okay, and just by way of reference, I believe you've got a copy of the joint report that was produced for the court case a couple of days ago. My detailed, slightly more expanded one is on pages 9, 10 and 11, if you need to go back to that later. Fundamentally, the church was built as a second building on the site. The original one was 1890s. This is about 1913. So it was a natural progression where the little timber shed that the community started off with moved into a larger one. The building itself is a very limited architectural merit, as I mentioned, and there's a detailed comparative study of about a dozen other churches by this particular architect, mostly in what you might call the non-conformist religions of the time. But this one was judged very much at the lower end of his artistic and architectural expressions. The building lost a certain degree of its integrity in the 1940s, when the 30s, 40s, when they decided to reverse the direction of the worship and actually expand the building nave into the hall at the back. So the whole idea of the integrity of the internal parts of the church was reversed and another side entrance put on. So there's a loss of integrity. It's been abandoned by its own community as a worship place of worship. And I guess historically, it was just literally one of many of the churches that were added to a growing suburb, as is very much the case. I don't believe that the building actually meets the exceptional, high, important, special type thresholds that is required of a property which is put forward for heritage listing. It's fairly ordinary and mediocre rather than special and important.
And what about its exterior presentation and the way it terminates the street and its landmark?
That's, I think, an historical accident by the fact that the land is actually at the end of that particular street. It's of no special note to simply be visible down a side street. It's on a main road. It sits at the end of a whole commercial shopping precinct, which has a strong character for those retail housing over shop site federation facades. So it's an anomaly in its own urban environment. And I just don't see the importance of Mr. Abrams as placed on that axial view down a side street. Yes, it's there, but I don't believe it's important.
Any other questions from the panel?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any other questions, but I'd like to record for the record that I also have read both late submissions.
Thank you.
If there's no other questions, I'll ask Mr. McKee to proceed.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate the opportunity. And I sincerely and genuinely thank the panel for making the effort to read the additional information. I acknowledge it was late, but I appreciate that. Listen, I can be relatively brief, but I will address the specific issues. The report from Mr. Abrahams is one which, you know, really does rely on this concept of foundational churches and an idea that we need to keep all of the foundational churches. And I think that that is, you know, is unnecessary. He concludes that as a Church of Christ in relation to Criterion A, the fact it's a church and it's a church in Marrickville, in my opinion, makes it a significant human activity. I would say that that is a long bow to draw. In terms of Criterion B, perhaps in the instance of time, Criterion B, obviously we have the architect, Mr. Brooks has detailed that. In relation to Criterion C, it's a good example of an arts and crafts church with Gothic detail. So there's a distinction, there's a disagreement between exactly what form of architecture it represents between the experts. In relation to it being a creative achievement and a particular taste. I mean, obviously minds will differ. This is a subjective area. But the critical thing really is that whether or not this planning proposal should go ahead, I understand what Annelise Tuer has said, and she's exactly right. We've got to look at to see whether the merits are sufficient for this to go forward. So we would just, I just simply say on behalf of the Churches of Christ, is that the actual, you know, juxtaposition of this building, the way it interrelates with the street, the angle of the actual church not being parallel with the street, all of these items, and obviously everything that Graham Brooks has said, are matters which we say should lead to this independent panel, you know, really considering whether or not this does meet the criteria. And that's your task. And obviously we're here to seek to persuade you that in all the circumstances of history, the submissions I've made in the documents, that it's one where it should not be, the planning proposal should not be pursued, and that would be the end of it.
All right. Do panel members have any questions of Mr. McKee?
Okay, gentlemen.
Annelise Tuer, I've got questions. Mr. McKee, in relation to the court case, is there actually a judgment? We've seen the orders, but is there actually a judgment that goes with that?
It will be out in the next day or two, but it was an agreement between the parties. So if I can provide a little bit more information. So what the court determined was that... given that the DA for the merits of the proposal was to be determined in October, that there would be as I've extracted in my letter, a sliding scale. The short answer to your question is, yes, Commissioner Horton did provide an extempore judgment, and it's in the process of being typed and then will be on the web.
So there was no decision about the actual significance made. It was essentially an agreement that because there were other plans afoot that you didn't need the IHO. Is that?
That is correct. We actually appealed the IHO on the basis that we would get a determination of the heritage issues. When the matter came before Commissioner Horton, who you'd be aware is an architect, not a heritage expert, we had assumed that the Chief Judge would be likely to appoint a heritage expert, in which case both matters would have been ventilated. But when he was given the case, it was determined that it was better to, well, the agreement between the parties was reached.
And remind me, how does it work? So once there's the three options as to the dates, but and one of them being that if there's the council resolves to prepare a planning proposal to list it, then does that mean that you have coverage? Because there's no actual statutory coverage until the LEP is made. So how does it work if there's no IHO?
It does work that there is an extension of the period for the IHO from 6 months, which expires in a couple of weeks. I was around the 14th of July. There'll be a on the basis that the planning proposal, council resolves to do the planning proposal under the Heritage Act, there'll be a further 6 months of protection through to the 14th of January. And then after that, it automatically is, the IHO is lifted. So what I can say to you is there is protection in the orders of the court through to the determination of the DA. In essence, if the planning proposal goes forward, then the case will be run on the basis that there is a, you know, that it's proceeding, and then we will be seeking to have the court determine that the heritage values of this building are not sufficient. So whether it is a heritage item, whether it's proposed to be a heritage item, the court has the power to determine, or the consent authority has the power to say this heritage item can be demolished in favour of the building that will replace it. Now, in the event that the planning proposal doesn't go ahead, then obviously there'll be no heritage issues in this particular matter, and it will just be dealt with on the outstanding matters which relate primarily to car parking. So that's the context within which this planning proposal and the decision of the panel and ultimately the council on the 23rd of June will have to make.
And this is a little bit beyond our consideration, but you, presumably your team has looked at options for incorporating the building into a proposal for the site, for the broader site. So you looked at the feasibility of doing that.
Yes, the constraints are significant. There is no relationship between the church facade and the actual street. There's no engagement.